64 challenges are ready. Is there a Cinderella story waiting for us? The best are set to battle it out, but there can only be one victor. Who has what it takes to win the Golden E-Ticket, the most prestigious award in all of Walt Disney World podcasting? It's Mouse Madness, baby!
Hello, you're listening to Reedy Geeks, a Walt Disney World podcast. My name is Andrew, and I'm joined today by our resident geyserologist with a Dole Whip problem, JJ.
I mean, I did get very scientific about geysers this episode.
Did you
fact
check that term? Is that a thing?
No.
No, we have no idea if that's a real term. No, not like the other one. The other one we did. This one we did not. And I think we're going to keep a Dole Whip problem, JJ, for for the foreseeable future.
It's not a problem if you can quit whenever you want.
And the Dockside patron, Sean. All Docksides.
Sure.
If you have a good title for my co-host after listening to this episode, please send in your ideas to readygeeks@gmail.com. In today's episode, the geeks go mad with Mouse Madness. We tackle our final four and finally bestow the undisputed best bar in Walt Disney World with the winner of the Golden E-Ticket Award. So welcome back to our final episode in our Mouse Madness Bar Edition. What do we call it? Series?
I don't know. Inaugural, for sure. Inaugural.
Oh, yeah. We're going to do this again.
Not bars, probably, but...
No, not bars.
Yeah.
Unless there's 64 new bars in Disney World by the time next year comes around. Drinks is a good one because I feel like restaurants is a little too adjacent to this. We'd be talking about
a lot of
the
same places.
We need a little
time before we do restaurants.
Drinks is good. I mean, rides is good, but a lot of the
shows,
the podcasts do rides.
Yeah.
Hotels? Are there 60? There's not 64 hotels.
Well, I guess we could include some of the neighboring hotels.
Mm, the old Super 8 on...
We could figure out something where we don't necessarily do 64, but...
The Airbnbs in Davenport.
Champions Gate.
We put up the 64 best Airbnbs at Champions Gate.
They're all exactly the same. Because you've got a wonderful imagination. So we thought we would do a different routine today, and instead of going straight into the matchups, we would... provide a little bit of history and how these bars developed and where they came from.
Yeah, you know, I was surprised at how much history the two bars that I worked on had.
Yeah.
I was quite frankly shocked.
You're saying there's historical context?
Yeah, actually a lot of historical context. Like, I had to condense it for it to fit within one episode.
We're big fans of historical context on this episode. On this,
we is doing a lot of heavy lifting, the word we.
It's a royal we. It's a royal we.
Oh, the king. The king loves his historical context.
So our final four is Dockside Bar at the Boathouse against Geyser Point Bar and Grill. And on the other side of the bracket, we have Nomad Lounge versus Trader Sam's Grog Grotto.
I mean, excellent choices.
These are good matchups.
Yeah. These are good. These are great
these are good
places.
Matchups.
All right. So let's start with our historical context from Dockside Bar at the Boathouse.
Okay. So Dockside Bar at the Boathouse opened in April of 2015. So coming up on a 10-year anniversary. Congratulations, Boathouse. So when it opened... Boathouse and the Dockside Bar quickly became Disney Springs icons. The food part is managed by Gibson's Restaurant Group, which has a lot of places that it owns, including the famous steakhouse in Chicago, Gibson's Steakhouse.
Now, does 2015, is that when Disney Springs became Disney Springs? Was this an inaugural restaurant to Disney Springs?
To my knowledge, yes.
Okay. Well, that's a good question.
I think that's when Disney, around that time, 2015, 2016, is when Disney Springs became what it is
to
now.
To my knowledge, that is, it was something that opened with Disney Springs being revealed, yes. So the Boathouse itself is actually a concept created by someone I consider to be a hero of the themed dining experience. The guy's name is Steven Schussler. Also known as the godfather of the Rainforest Cafe.
Whoa.
Wow.
Yeah, and T-Rex. So the Rainforest Cafe has like this insane history that Podcast The Ride did an episode about, and it's really fun. But the highly condensed version is that the Rainforest Cafe was like a big passion project for Steve. He had this vision that like people love animatronics and themed experiences, but like no investors were willing to like let him open up a chain of restaurants. So he did what any sane person would do, and he turned his house into a Rainforest Cafe and brought investors in to prove how cool it was.
Wow.
And it worked. And then, like, cut to, like, within 5 years, he had, like, 40 Rainforest Cafes across the country. And Steven Schussler's passion is insane. And the Boathouse is... also a testament to that. It is his passion for themed experiences really is reflected in the restaurant, interestingly enough, because you know, you go there and you think, oh, it's like nautical themed, and there's some stuff on the walls, and oh, this thing looks like a boat and that thing looks like a boat, but it's actually like really well thought out. And the Boathouse is inspired by Steven Schussler's personal history. He's lived on Lake Minnetonka in Minnesota, and it's an ode to like living the lake life and celebrating all sorts of unique vessels. So the Boathouse features 28 different types of boats from different eras. And that can be found on the wall decor, on the tables, the materials of the bar. It was all a way to pay homage to these interesting and unique boats because of the location of it. You know, it was prime waterfront. It reminded him of his lake house on Lake Minnetonka, and he wanted to kind of make a themed experience all around that. And because of that lakefront area, he wanted to bring in these amphicars, which you see, they are something that... It's a weenie of Disney Springs, right?
Yeah.
It like, it pulls you in. I didn't know that
the amphicars were specifically related with the Boathouse.
Yes, they belong to the Boathouse. Okay. It's part of the Boathouse.
Cool.
Which is another reason why this place is so special. And, you know, specifically why that bar is so special is because it is the prime viewing location to watch the amphicar boat launch.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That whole area is, you know, your front row watching these cool, like kitschy old cars that are somehow also boats. It's like James Bond, but like,
yeah, I mean, some of them look like you got like a 57 Chevy launching out into the,
yeah, it's like the kitschy version of a James Bond car. Yeah. It's really, really cool. If you've never been, you know, as soon as you go to that area of Disney Springs, you're just completely drawn into that area. But what's interesting is I think the Dockside Bar is the kind of place that makes you stay there. Like, you get drawn in because of those amphicars, but you want to stay because you get the full Boathouse menu at the Dockside Bar. There are these amazing, cool signature drinks and seasonal offerings, including the iconic blue ducky drink.
Yes.
Which you've definitely seen on social media if you've ever, you know, followed like a Disney food sort of page, or if you've ever rifled through Sean's luggage.
Which I have.
So to say that the Boathouse and a Dockside Bar was a success is a huge understatement. The Boathouse is actually the number three highest revenue for an independent, as in a non-chain restaurant, in the United States for 2024. It brought in over $45 million in revenue.
Wow.
Which is a ton, which is like double of what number 12 was, which was the Smith and Wolensky's, which is a big steakhouse in the city. You know, it's like, you know, you've got like the old steakhouses are like Keen's and Peter Luger and Smith and Wolensky. So this is a big deal kind of place. It's a very iconic steakhouse, and Boathouse doubles their revenue annually.
Yeah.
It's nuts. So... for its 10th anniversary, I feel like there is nothing more fitting to celebrate it than with one more achievement, and that is being in the final four of Best Bar in all of Walt Disney World for the Reedy Geeks podcast.
Yeah.
It's a pretty like big, you know, big deal being in our final four.
It's a very prestigious award.
Yes. I agree. Bars will you know, when you go to bars in Disney Springs and places have to advertise in their front window their health code, their rating, everything. Yeah. Places will eventually put
their golden e-ticket.
They got their Zagat, right?
Exactly.
That they have underneath.
Maybe right above their Michelin star, they've got
their little golden e-ticket. Yeah.
You've got to make
mentioned on the Reedy Geeks podcast,
right? Runner up.
Runner up.
That's crazy about the money, though, because that breaks down to about, if you go your average 30-day month, the boathouse brings in about $126,000 a day.
In
bills. Wow. That's crazy.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
I mean, the place is always packed.
The place is always packed.
Yeah. One of those places that's, you know, it's not impossible to get a reservation but it is hard to get a reservation.
Which means it has to be... it has to be popular for locals. That kind of business is more than just tourists coming down, because you got to imagine people coming down to Disney. I feel like on average, your casual Disney goer is walking around Disney Springs, not really knowing where to go, what to do. They're kind of just, you know, seeing the sights. They may not know to go to the boathouse. So to bring in that kind of money, that has to be one of the most popular restaurants just in the Central Florida area.
Oh, I mean, it was the highest ranked. There wasn't any other on that list. There wasn't, you know, there wasn't another one in the top five in Orlando.
That's great.
That is crazy.
Because it's a great bar. And we're really only focusing on the outside area.
Yes.
Just the bar.
The outside bar. There's an inside bar, too. Yeah. Didn't even mention it, this whole bracket. Just the outside bar. And the inside bar it's got a lot of like boat materials. Like,
isn't it an actual boat?
Looks like a boat. Yeah. It's got a lot of like brass and stuff that it's like accurate to what a boat that size would be built with.
Yeah.
It looks like the hull of a boat. And then there's obviously that big booth that was made out of a boat. You're like sitting in a boat.
Like sci-fi diner. Drive-in,
right? Yeah, so, like but cooler and classy because it's boats and not cars.
Right.
Not 50s cars.
And you're not watching the same video on loop over and over. that they've been
cars
watching.
Are trashy, but boats are classy.
Yeah, my favorite part of the dockside boathouse is the boats that's on the TV. Right, they just have like a constant loop of boats driving in the water.
I like watching the
sailing.
Actual boats.
When it's in the water, it's sailing.
Well, some of them are motorboats. I guess they're still sailing.
Yeah, they're sailing.
Okay.
Yeah. Boats sail.
All right. Well, thank you, JJ.
No problem. My pleasure, actually. anytime I get to highlight a hero like Stephen Schussler.
Well, he's
like some sort of monster, but I love him.
We have to host a retraction on the next episode.
I did not know about the crimes that Stephen Schussler committed.
Boys, watch your manners.
Yeah, if you can't say something nice.
Boys.
Okay, so I am going to talk about Geyser Point here, which is going up against the boathouse. A story about Geyser Point is really the story of Copper Creek, the DVC resort that was built around the same time as Geyser Point. So just to put us on a timeline here, a little historical context for Sean. Wilderness Lodge is built in 94, and the first DVC resort at Wilderness Lodge is first called Villas at Disney's Wilderness Lodge, now known as Boulder Ridge. That's built 6 years later in 2000. Copper Creek came along later on in 2017, and that's when they changed the name from Villas at Disney's Wilderness Lodge to Boulder Ridge. It's a similar situation of like World War One and World War Two, right?
Wait, they didn't call it World War One?
I always ask my students that, like, what do you think they called it? They're like, World War One. I said, why would they
all
do
the
that?
Same things happened there. Yeah, they're both very similar.
Ladies and gentlemen, I'd like to apologize for our slight technical difficulties.
So in 2017, Disney wants to expand DVC further because that's what they always want to do now, right? And they want to replace some unused hotel rooms that are in Wilderness Lodge with some more profitable DVC villas. And so there's some reasons for this. DVC owners will pick up the the payment for maintenance, room keeping, and they'll end up paying for a bigger slice of the amenities like the restaurants, bell service, merchandise, even transportation. So Disney saves some money on that end. Plus, these are unused hotel rooms, and now they're going to have occupancy from DVC members. And at the same time, Disney doesn't have to lower their price on Wilderness Lodge rooms because they've just reduced the supply of rooms instead by making Copper Creek.
Okay, that makes sense.
Rather than discount.
Rather than charging $350 a night for it, they can keep charging $500 a night.
Right. Because the supply of rooms is lower.
Is much lower.
Yeah. Huh. And they had some success with this in the past. In 2015, they opened the Polynesian Bungalows. And so they wanted to do something similar and open up cabins at Wilderness Lodge because the bungalows were very successful. They were like the talk of DVC, you know, very luxurious. Even though the vast majority of the members will never be able to stay in one, me included, they provide great marketing content for DVC and they can sell more points that way. Like, look at these bungalows. Don't you want to stay here? You're never going to be able to, but
don't you want to?
Don't you want to? And there was the idea of these cabins at Wilderness Lodge going all the way back in the 70s. They had planned to build a resort there called Cypress Point Lodge, and they were going to have cabins as part of the rooms on the waterfront. So it's one of those things where a good idea never dies at Disney. They just bring it back, you know, 50 years later, right? In addition, Wilderness Lodge itself needs a refresh. So they're going to use this opportunity to refresh Artist Point into storybook dining at Artist Point, renovate the Boulder Ridge Pool, which is now very cool. Like, it has a huge crane in it, and it's the crane from the backstage tour.
Oh, cool. You know, it's that cool how they repurpose things like that.
Yeah.
Like the DJ at Oga's Cantina is Rex from the old Star Tours.
Yeah.
That's cool how things get repurposed there.
Yeah. So they renovate the pool. They also added a spa. They took away the main pool's bar and they turned it into a spa. That's currently closed, though, as with like all the spas except for Grand Floridian.
Pave Paradise and put up a spa.
Put up a spa.
Are spas just not a popular thing at Disney World?
I think they were at one point, or now if they could just, you know, ship everyone over to Grand Floridian.
And that's just the place to go if you want a spa treatment, you go to Grand Floridian.
I think, though, it's a shame that Saratoga Springs and Spa doesn't have a spa.
Yeah.
You know,
it's literally resort and spa.
Resort and spa. You're right.
Doesn't have a spa.
Yeah.
Yeah. Wow.
And that, you know, I don't know if when that will actually open, you know, who knows. But in addition, they wanted to build a hybrid quick service bar and grill, and they're going to call that Geyser Point. So Geyser Point is actually pretty important to this plan of renovating Wilderness Lodge. Because unlike when those Copper Creek rooms are just hotel rooms, DVC resorts have close to 100% occupancy rate, you know, all year round. So I did some research on this for the story, and Wilderness Lodge in general always has their DVC rooms are always at 95 to 98% occupied all year round.
Jeez.
Yeah. So, you know, these were rooms that maybe were 50, 60% occupied, now going up to, you know, in the 90s, you need more food for them, for all those people that are there.
Right.
Plus you're adding 36 waterfront cabins. So you're going to need the extra food. And they're taking this time to renovate Roaring Fork, which is the quick service there. So that was down for a significant amount of time. There's no more pool bar because that got turned into a spa. So it was pretty important that they had another food establishment there at the Wilderness Lodge. They also wanted to make it like pretty luxurious because that's what the cabins are. The cabins are
right,
meant to be luxury.
Well, right, because they're supposed to be the Wilderness Lodge version of the bungalows.
Right. Yes. And so, you know, they're supposed to be pretty luxurious feeling. Again, just to sell. You know, you're doing this to sell the points, right? But with everything in the Wilderness Lodge, of course, it has like a backstory. The Wilderness Lodge, I mean, I haven't looked into the backstory of like all the resorts around Disney World, but I don't know if one has as much backstory as the Wilderness Lodge. Like, just even the pool has a backstory of like some dumb prospector lit some dynamite by accident and created a crater. Oh,
there's like a backstory. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Like a fictional backstory.
A fictional backstory. Right. Sorry. Yeah.
Okay.
More clear about that. Yeah.
Yeah. I understand that. One of my bars has significant
backstory
that I'm actually going to present as the real story.
Yeah. So I'm not going to go into the whole fictional backstory of all of Wilderness Lodge, because honestly, that could be its own episode, own series of episodes. But the backstory starts with Boulder Ridge, ironically, because it's the second one to be built. Boulder Ridge is supposed to have been built in the late 1800s. And then Wilderness Lodge is supposed to be built in the early 1900s. And then Copper Creek is supposed to be having just been renovated into a luxurious accommodations, which makes sense because that's actually what happened. But Boulder Ridge is based on railroad hotels by Fred Harvey in the late 1800s. Harvey hated the accommodations that were along the Transcontinental Railroad, especially the Southwest Pacific. And so he set out to create a more civilized, quote unquote, civilized, hotels and high quality hotels and restaurants at these stops along the railroad. And this is supposed to be one of those stops. So this is supposed to be a hotel that's made by Fred Harvey in the late 1800s. And it's supposed to predate the Wilderness Lodge proper building.
Is Fred Harvey one of these SEA or Adventurers Club people?
No, Fred Harvey's actually a real person.
Oh, jeez.
That's a real story. Yeah, that's a real story.
It's not a shell corporation. That
no.
No,
because
a window in Main Street, USA?
Right, exactly. Yeah, so many. It's not like a Henry Hightower or whatever.
No. Yeah, no. Fred Harvey is a real person, built a company, was very successful at it, had tons of hotels and restaurants, even had this like side thing of like, it's not a side thing, but he would hire girls from the East Coast to come work at his establishments. And like, of course, he had criteria. It was like the original Hooters. Yeah. And but that was, people credit that as quickening the settlement of the West, because tons of women, single women, came out West.
Oh, and then these guys,
Harvey's girls.
And then these guys would be in these places and be like, oh wow, look at all these women in this town. I think I've gone far west enough.
Yeah, I'm gonna settle down here.
So where does Geyser Point come into this?
Okay. So Geyser Point is named after the geyser that's right next to the bar and grill, right? And that's called the Fire Rock Geyser. All right, so there's a little bit of backstory on the Fire Rock Geyser, and then that's all I'll give you for backstory, okay? So there used to be a newspaper. When you checked into the Wilderness Lodge, they would give you this newspaper. It was called the Silver Creek Star, and that newspaper had all the backstories of everything in Wilderness Lodge on it. And so this starts with Colonel Ezekiel Moreland. And it's the early 1900s, and he finds a beautiful valley with a beautiful river in it, and it has many minerals in it that sparkles when it light hits it. So he names it the Silver Creek Springs. So that's that spring that you see inside the lobby that travels down towards
cool.
the pool.
Okay.
He sends a letter to his daughter to come meet him there. She's an art curator. He brings her and decides to build a small cabin near the spring. And it expands into a huge lodge as it becomes more and more popular. If you want to see the original small cabin, it's the bike rental stand. That's the OG cabin.
Oh, okay. Okay.
He makes friends with Native Americans in the area, particularly Running Elk. They're good friends. And he tells him about a story about how one winter, a Native American hunting party got trapped in this valley that they're in right now. And they built a fire to stay warm, but they had to keep it going continuously. So after 5 days of having this fire continuously going, the rock underneath the fire started to crack and crumble. And the next day when they put the last log onto the fire, it exploded and became a great pillar of hot steam water coming up, and they launched their teepee high in the air. The natives ran, and they told people to stay away from the valley. They thought that they had angered the spirits of the earth because they were wasteful and kept the fire going day day and night.
As a geyserologist, I can confirm that that was the truth.
No, it's the spirits.
That's exactly how they work.
So now the geyser erupts every hour to remind people of the wastefulness that occurred there, except for the between the hours of 10 p.m. and 11 and 7 a.m. because, you know, the geyser knows people are trying to sleep.
Of course, that's respectful.
Yeah.
Well, again, the spirits are respectful.
Yeah.
The spirits have to sleep too.
Yeah. But that's why the geyser's called the Fire Rock Geyser, because, you know, that's fire.
What the Native rock, Americans, referred to it as. It. Yeah. Okay, cool.
And then, so we get to Copper Creek.
So where does Geyser Point come into this?
Well, it's next to the geyser, right? We get to Copper Creek because if Boulder Ridge was one of those old railroad hotels, and the Wilderness Lodge is this new hotel that's based around the spring, what's Copper Creek? So Copper Creek, this backstory is really just on the cabins, and they were the housing for the loggers, miners, and craftsmen who settled along that area to work on the Grand Wilderness Lodge. So that's the cabins they lived in. And so time has passed, the logging industry has faded away, and the area transformed into a peaceful retreat rather than a working settlement. And the cabins were restored and modernized and became luxurious waterfront accommodations that the guests enjoy today. And so, of course, they need a local watering hole.
Enter.
Geyser Point, Bar and Grill.
Can I interest you in Geyser Point?
It serves as the resort's relaxing gathering place, just like how the workers would have needed to have a relaxing gathering place after the hard day work.
Sure. Yeah. Sure.
But of course, that's been renovated and now luxurious.
Luxurious. Indoor-outdoor.
Indoor-outdoor. You
right.
know what I did?
Yes, yes.
In this research, I did learn that I have multiple sources saying that there are retractable walls on Geyser Point if it's raining, like, and the water's coming in.
That makes sense.
But I can't find any picture of the walls down. So I can't confirm that, but you know, a couple sources.
It might be so, like, it has to get really bad.
Right.
You know, like, your average 3 o'clock in the afternoon Florida rainstorm is probably not going to shut the doors, but
yeah.
Yeah.
And then who's taking a picture? Like, you know, not for a blog. You're not taking a picture of like the Disney food blog isn't taking a picture in that rain.
Yeah. Yeah.
To, you know, to put on their website.
Yeah, I guess so. Yeah.
So that is Geyser Point's backstory. And I'm really interested in Wilderness Lodge's backstory too. Like,
yeah, I did not realize that Wilderness Lodge had this deep, like, lore.
Oh, every aspect of it. Roaring Fork, Artist Point is that people were so amazed by the geyser that they just sat there for hours drawing the geyser, and then they became known as Artist Point. Even the carpet, like, the carpet's a specific type of red because of how many people from China worked on the Transcontinental Railroad, and to honor that. And then if the light hits it at a certain time of the day, it forms a railroad on the carpet. Like, it's really, there's so much about the Wilderness Lodge. So many details.
Wow.
Are the other hotels this detailed?
I have no idea. This is like Eisner's thing, though, right? Like, he has a quote that everything should speak.
Another hero. I apologize for the things I said about Michael Eisner
years ago, right? Yeah.
He was a hero to themed experiences.
Yeah, I don't know if we'll ever see this type of intricate details again.
No, because everything now is just luxury.
Yeah.
Everything in Disney for the next 15, 20 years is going to be enhancing DVC offerings, building towers, building luxury offerings. Yeah, you're not going to all the storytelling is going to be in the parks. It's not going to be in the hotels.
Yeah.
Which is a shame.
Well, it is a shame.
I know that the new Polynesian Tower has a lot of details that honor the Hawaiian people and the history of Polynesia. So a lot of the artwork and stuff has real meaning behind it. But I don't think it has... It doesn't have
a fictional backstory.
Yeah. It just has like...
authenticity.
Like, oh, you're right. Authentic homages to the culture that it's representing.
Yeah. Which is really impressive in its own way.
Right. It's a different sort of thing. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Where it's not like a spectacle. It's not like, well, let's make up this fake story that to tie all of this together.
Right.
It's like, no, let's make this themed nice and like you want to honor and proudly display this culture, but you don't want to do something offensive, right?
Right, right.
How? That's proprietary.
Well, that was... I learned a ton.
Awesome.
I think we learned more than we maybe anticipated learning.
All right, so that's our final four on the right side of the bracket from Springs and the Restaurant. And if we head on over to the left side where we have the Parks and Resorts, we have Nomad Lounge against Trader Sam's Grog Grotto.
Nomad Lounge versus Trader Sam's Grog Grotto. Good matchup.
Very good matchup.
It is a great matchup. Sean, you want to tell us a little bit more about Nomad Lounge?
Yeah, Nomad Lounge. To understand Nomad Lounge, we really have to talk about the restaurant that it's attached to, which is Tiffin's. Tiffin's and Nomad Lounge both opened up in 2017 when they replaced Camp Mini Mickey, which was kind of that whole area was on its way to becoming Pandora. So they wanted to do something with that area, and Tiffin's and Nomad Lounge both opened up at the same time. But I was trying to look up specifically Nomad Lounge, and there wasn't a lot of history for Nomad Lounge, which caused me to kind of look into what specifically Tiffin's was. And Nomad Lounge is just advertised as kind of like the outpost of Tiffin's, where Tiffin's sit-down restaurant is basically... I mean, anyone who knows Disney and knows the story of Animal Kingdom, you think of Joe Rohde, you know, his basically big passion project, him traveling to, Mount Everest and traveling to these places to theme the park. And Tiffin's is basically an homage to all the traveling that was done. It's basically, an homage and, in a weird way, a memorial, but, you know, a living memorial to the Imagineers that did all the traveling to get Animal Kingdom as
authentic
as it is. And it's all pictures of the Imagineers traveling, a lot of Joe Rohde's adventures and expeditions in just making sure that they're bringing the most authenticity from these countries, from these areas of the world to Animal Kingdom. So Tiffin's is just one big, like I said, homage to the traveling and the expeditions that were done to make Animal Kingdom what it was. And the Nomad Lounge, and Nomad obviously is the word Nomad means traveling person. Nomad's Lounge celebrates the traveling that the people that come from around the world to Disney World to visit do. And there's a lot of, above the bar, there's a hanging chandelier that has a bunch of kind of questions that make you think about why you travel, where you travel, when, and kind of what you want to experience when you travel different places. So the whole Tiffin's and Nomad Lounge themselves, while there's not a lot of actual history, the way there's history, like, you know, history for the Boathouse or for,
Geyser Point.
But it's just there's a lot of storytelling, which I think, I don't know, in doing a little bit of reading on this, I think Animal Kingdom might be the park that maybe does storytelling the best.
Yeah, just with its essence.
Yeah.
Like, not even with rides or anything like that, but just like, you know, the buildings, the architecture,
It almost created the new style of, like, looking at the Polynesian Tower, right? Where we just spoke about, oh, the tower has all of these things that are highly themed, but still dedicated and respectful to the cultures. Like, mm-hmm. Animal Kingdom started that.
Yeah.
That's really interesting that Tiffin's, you know, has all those little details mm-hmm. that explain, you know, how they got all this stuff and how they right. how they knew how to how do you make an African village? Well, you have to go. You have to go yeah. to an African village, and then you say, "Oh, this is authentic. This is yeah. what's right. Yeah. This is what would be appropriate and fair for the people, and celebrates that place in a great way."
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I like how you said that, you know, they're doing something. It's like the start of this new type of immersive environment. Like, just think about, you know, Animal Kingdom comes out in 98, right? You have Islands of Adventure in 99. And look how different those two parks are, right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Like, you know, this is the start of, okay, Harry Potter World then comes next, and you go, oh, that's another step up from in immersion. But it kind of started with Animal Kingdom.
Because even then, the Disney parks weren't really like, the, you know, Fantasyland and Tomorrowland and the World Showcase and, you know.
It's superficial.
Right. It's not like, it's a different level of, Animal Kingdom brings a different level of immersion where you really, you know, you know you're in Florida, you know you're in Disney World, but it really feels like you're sitting in a restaurant in Africa or in a restaurant in Asia.
Yes.
Or a marketplace in Harambe.
Exactly. You know? Yeah.
If you took the people away, you go, yeah, this is legit.
Yeah.
You know? But then it's full of theme park goers and you go, oh yeah, I am in Disney World in Florida.
So like while Tiffin's is a celebration of the Imagineers and everything they did to bring Animal Kingdom basically to life, Nomad Lounge is a celebration of just traveling and different people visiting, you know, every day, thousands of people visiting the parks, different people every day.
That's cool.
And I think that's what makes Nomad Lounge kind of a cool, special place.
Yeah, I like that.
Nomad Lounge is a very special place. Maybe they can add a thought-provoking message on the chandelier that says, final four member of the Reading Geeks podcast.
Are you Mouse a final Madness. Four member? That could be the thought provoking.
And of course, to make sure we're tying it all back into bars, you know, we've talked at length that the offerings that Nomad Lounge has. It has most of the same food that you can get from Tiffin's.
Yeah, a shortened, barified version of Tiffin's.
Great menu of exclusive cocktails that are exclusive to Nomad Lounge. They're not the standard cocktails you can get really everywhere else in Disney. You have to go to the Nomad Lounge to get these specific drinks.
Yeah.
It's not that one that comes with the glowing ice cube that you can get everywhere.
Right. Every pool bar, every Value Resort pool bar gives you the glowing ice cube drink.
Hey, you can get that glowing ice cube at any of those ones.
Can
the
you?
Animal Kingdom Lodge at the Victoria Falls, you can get it. You can get it. You probably get a Crew Cup Lounge too.
Yeah. All right. So JJ, our last one, Trader Sam's Grog Grotto.
So yeah, Trader Sam's Grog Grotto has an extensive history, and I'm gonna start us in the year 1955.
Oh boy.
This is where, yeah, we're going to go 70 years in 10 minutes. So, buckle up. So the year is 1955. There is a budding business tycoon named Trader Sam, and he found himself new, fame and fortune from a shrunken head shop that he ran, which coincidentally just recently became prime real estate. The Jungle Navigation Company began running a little cruise to take you up close to Schweitzer Falls and showcase the eighth wonder of the world, the backside of water.
Ah, yeah.
Turns out Trader Sam's shop was directly on this path, and the shrunken head business is his family's business and not Sam's true passion, which was his pub.
Huh.
The pub is where he could showcase his love for both enchanted items and unique beverages. And the source of his love for unique beverages was from being bitten by a bartending bug. Literally. And that's a true story.
What year did this happen? Well,
it's not a true story.
No, that's a true story.
It's a true story.
So, Trader Sam is an eternal figure. Apparently... has lived for an undetermined amount of time. Hundreds of years is the current estimate.
Wow.
Basically, his pub was a meeting place for some of the most well-known adventurers from like the late 1700s on. Pirates, members of the Society of Explorers and Adventurers, the Adventurers Club, which these are like people like Davy Jones, Henry Hightower, and actually President Theodore Roosevelt.
He would be in that club.
He is literally in this club.
Yeah.
He's been to the now closed location of Trader Sam's. But when the Disneyland Hotel closed in 2011, Trader Sam's had the opportunity to open and relocate his bar to the Disneyland Hotel while they were renovating it. So this location became known as Trader Sam's Enchanted Tiki Bar. And it celebrates his original location by showing off all of the enchanted items that he collected and the illustrious history that his pub had, showcasing people that stopped by. And there's lots of little Easter eggs and details on the walls.
Mm-hmm.
So that bar was so successful that in spring of 2015, Trader Sam was able to channel his inner Roy Kroc and franchise his beloved bar.
Good reference.
Opening Trader Sam's Grog Grotto at Walt Disney World. This was replacing what was once just an arcade at the Polynesian Resort. The Grog Grotto was able to again showcase different historical artifacts that celebrate the history of his original bar.
Okay.
And this has a lot of all new decorations because his bar had such an illustrious history that a lot of the stuff on the walls in both locations, in the one in California and the one in Florida, are different. A lot of the wall decorations are different.
Well, however, he's like hundreds of years old, so.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So, however, both versions of the bars feature a lot of the same enchanted items because, as any good collector will tell you, you have to keep triples at everything because triples is best.
Triples is best.
Triples and, the Barracuda.
And triples keeps it safe. So, if you haven't been to Trader Sam's, you can experience his enchanted items by ordering certain drinks. Out of respect to people who may have never been to Trader Sam's, I'm not going to tell you what the enchantments are, but I will read the list of drinks that trigger these enchantments to happen.
Okay.
And as well as let you know if this is an exclusive one to Disney World, because there are one or two that are exclusive to Disney World.
Okay.
So the drinks that you order when you would like to see an enchantment are the Hippopotamo Mai Tai, the Krakatoa Punch, the Mosquito Mojito, the Nautilus, the Polynesian Pearl, the Shipwreck on the Rocks, the Zombie Head, and of course the Aoa. So the Aoa is one of the things that happens when you order an Aoa doesn't happen at the one in California. So it's a little more involved. And then the Nautilus is completely exclusive to
Disney World.
Disney World.
That's cool.
So if you're someone from the West Coast, I would suggest ordering the Aoa.
I think the Nautilus is the one that's the most involved.
The Krakatoa Punch and the Nautilus are the ones that do the most stuff.
Yeah.
The Polynesian Pearl too.
I don't think we had that.
No, but we saw people order it.
We did, okay.
Yeah. So the bar incorporates the elaborate history of Trader Sam, its patrons, and the Jungle Cruise in an incredibly fun and immersive way. It has a lot of cheesy theme park humor, animatronics, and strong, sweet drinks. The bar is so popular that it can sometimes be 3-hour-plus waits. But as we've discussed on this, it's considered a real destination that many deem, quote, worth the wait.
Yeah.
The good news is Trader Sam now has a new historical event that it can display on its wall, being in the final four of Best Bar at Walt Disney World on the Reedy Geeks podcast.
Yeah.
Put that put that right next to a photo of Theodore Roosevelt.
And maybe it'll get to hang a banner.
I mean, one of these places gets to hang a banner.
Yeah. The Golden E-Ticket Award.
The Golden E-Ticket.
The most prestigious award in all of Walt Disney World podcasting.
Are you making fun of me?
No, no, no. No, just
try to. No, no, not at all.
Boys, boys, watch your manners.
Yeah, if you can't say something nice.
Boys, boys.
So that's Trader Sam's, or at least the abridged version of Trader Sam. He's got a, there's a crazy history with all that. Once you get into the SEA and Adventurers Club stuff.
They need to bring that back. I want an SEA bar or, you know, hotel or something. Like, that would be so cool.
I mean, I believe that possibly that Pirates bar may have some of that in there because Davy Jones, Jack Sparrow, Jack Sparrow's mother are all kind of in that world as well. I don't know if they're officially members of SEA.
Right.
But there could be some influence in that. And it's all over the Disney Sea, the Tokyo park.
Mm. Oh, really?
It's like all dedicated to that. Their Tower of Terror, I mean, the star of it is Henry Hightower, which is Joe Rohde. Like, look up a picture of Henry Hightower. He looks familiar.
All right. So let's get into our voting. We'll start with Dockside Bar at Boathouse and Geyser Point Bar and Grill.
It comes down to this.
It does. Wow. There's not much more disgusting we can really do.
Yeah, we've said the good, we've said the bad, for some of them we've said the ugly. We've gone as far down the rabbit hole in each one of these places as we possibly could, so.
Here's the thing. I know we had a lot of tough matchups. I don't think this one is that tough for me.
No.
I ultimately don't think it is either. I think I know where I'm voting. I think I've known for a little while where I'm voting.
Yeah, as soon as the one ended, I knew this one.
Yeah. All right, so then let's just go with it.
Okay. I'm voting for Dockside Bar at Boathouse. I just think it's, I really do think it might be the best bar in all of Walt Disney World.
I'm going Geyser Point Bar and Grill. I think it's more versatile. I think you fit more people in it. It's a nice, quiet atmosphere. I like it.
My vote will be for the Dockside Bar as well.
The listeners voted for Dockside Bar.
Wow. We got a finalist.
A finalist. Wow. The first finalist. And we'll take a moment to properly send off Geyser Point Bar and Grill.
Geyser Point had a stupendous run and hard-pressed to find a better way to spend those crowded park afternoons in Magic Kingdom area.
Yeah. I'm not upset about it. I'm glad I put in my vote for Geyser, but Dockside, I mean, especially when you got a nice breeze going out there, like, it's nice.
It's a really, it's a special place. And I think I just have a new appreciation for it with doing the research and realizing that the Rainforest Cafe guy is also the guy that decorated that place too.
Yeah.
And that there was a lot of, there was a Disney level of attention to detail put in theming that place, which not everywhere in Disney Springs.
No.
Is.
A lot of Disney Springs is just commercialized chains and
or like
privately owned businesses. There's not a lot of Disney Springs that feels like Disney.
Yeah.
Yeah. And right. And it has a little bit of magic. It's got those amphicars, which are so weird and cool. Yeah. And yeah, it's a special place.
Yeah.
Okay. So then our next final four matchup is Nomad Lounge versus Trader Sam's Grog Grotto.
This is the hard one.
For me, this is the tougher one. Yeah.
This is the hard one. Like, the math has me one way and my heart has me another way.
Yeah. I'm feeling the same.
Yeah.
And at this present moment, I still don't know how I'm voting.
So what is your hang up?
My hang up is, like, we just said we were voting for Dockside. What edged Dockside over Geyser Point was that it felt a little more magical. While even though Nomad Lounge has a great kind of history and story celebrating the Imagineers, I mean, Trader Sam's is Walt Disney World.
Right.
It's 1955. It's everything about Walt Disney World and the magic that they want to bring to the parks.
Disney parks in general.
Disney resorts. Yeah. It's a tough one. I think I know where I'm going, but I'm not.
I'm just going with what the better bar is, and I just think Nomad Lounge is the better bar. The better experience might be Trader Sam's, but the better bar.
I think once you factor in repeatability, I think I have to go with Nomad Lounge.
Yeah.
And I feel really bad. I love Trader Sam's. I'm going in May, and my wife has never been, and we're going to carve time out of our trip to make sure we go.
Yeah. Literally, as you were saying your whole history of Trader Sam's, I texted my wife saying, I think we should go back to Trader Sam's. We should try it out again.
Yeah, my vote's for Nomad Lounge.
Yeah, I just think it's kind of...
Yeah.
I think it's just kind of a little
bit of everything. And it might be the repeatability. Because it's Trader Sam's is not a place I would want to do every single trip.
No, it's a place you go... It's a place you love if you go less than once a year, right?
Yeah.
Like if you go... If you went 3 times in 1 year to Trader Sam's, you'd be done with it.
I mean, that's too many. It's too many Sams.
Right. Well, no. I'm married to a Sam. You can never have enough Sam.
Good save. Good save there. Too much trading.
Too much trading.
Stop trying to make trades.
It's Nomad Lounge. I think now that I've said it, it's easily Nomad Lounge.
Yeah, the math supported that big time for me. It was just, you know, it just hurt my heart to send Trader Sam's away.
It's I'm so glad too that three of us agree, because the listeners was dead tied at 19 points for Nomad Lounge, 19 points for Trader Sam's.
How would we have broken that tie?
So
we would have had to call Len.
We would have had to refer
Len's input. Yeah.
So we have a final matchup.
We do. Our final matchup is Nomad Lounge versus Dockside Bar at the Boathouse. A number one seed versus a number four seed.
Okay.
A worthy matchup. Yeah. Before we get into the final, I do have some superlatives prepared that I'd like to give, maybe like a mini award show. We're gonna hand out some superlatives to,
and we'll do some golf clapping for this.
maybe he's got a drop that might sound better than us clapping.
Two people clapping with one hand. First, I want to say thank you to everyone that filled out brackets and made this bracket happen. I think.
Yeah,
you guys.
I mean, I'm holding a bigger stack of printed out brackets than I thought we were gonna get.
Yeah,
so,
yeah. It's this is amazing.
This is how many there are.
There's a lot of brackets.
There are. So no, we had a lot of fun with this, and can't wait to pick a topic for next year.
And if you have ideas for next year, please let us know. So my first superlative is going to be to everyone that played along. Congratulations, you guys really helped make this just even more fun. The next superlative is going to be the biggest bracket buster, and that is going to go to the Stargazers Bar for defeating Polite Pig, because zero people in all of those brackets had Stargazers making out of the first round.
I know, everyone picked Polite Pig.
And our shenanigans with the random events completely decimated that.
Yeah, that was a huge bracket buster.
What was the event again, about watching a game?
Yes. Exactly, it was watching the game.
Your favorite team is in the playoffs.
And you want to watch the game?
Yeah.
Okay.
The next one is surprising because a recipient was actually a one seed, but the Cinderella Award, because every bracket needs a good Cinderella story. And this is going to go to Dockside Margaritas.
Dockside Margaritas.
So much longer than I thought it was going to last.
How many of us have actually ever had a drink at Dockside Margaritas?
I've had a beer Dockside Margaritas.
I have not. I'm going to, though. Yeah,
you have to now.
I know. Yeah. It made it to the Sweet 16.
I had a margarita. I had a margarita
or you're the Dockside patron.
I had to have.
Drink up, me hearty Joe.
The next award is the Rookie of the Year Award, which is, of course, going to Waialulu Bar and Grill.
Which, it is definitely a rookie. It's not even 1 year old.
It's not even 4 months old.
Yeah.
It's unbelievable how far it came in the first year. And I think if we ran this same tournament back in a few years, it would probably do even better.
Yeah. So it went...
It made it to the Elite Eight, right? It was Waialulu versus Geyser.
Yes, yeah. It made it to the Elite Eight.
Yeah, that's huge.
Wow.
Yeah.
And you know what? We had some listeners that picked it to go pretty far, too.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I'm sure there are people that had it in the Final Four, right?
Yep.
Yeah. I mean, it seems worthy. It's just so new. I haven't been there to really compare it to Geyser Point. So the next one is the award for most outrageous seating.
As if we haven't said enough about the seating.
Yeah, I know we said we'd stop talking about the seating, but I had to bring it up again. And that goes to Warong Outpost at Animal Kingdom Lot. At the Animal Kingdom.
Claps.
For being a four seed. And it is just a...
It's basically a beer cart.
It's a margarita machine and a couple beers.
Yeah, I visited it my last time there at Disney just a couple weeks ago. And so I'm going to post that in our Instagram page about me there enjoying the four seed best bar.
What did you have there? Do you remember?
I got a margarita.
Okay.
Yeah. Wow.
I think they only serve margarita and like a Bud Light or something.
Animal Kingdom doesn't scream margarita to me. I don't know.
Yeah.
I think it also has that Safari Amber Ale.
Yes.
Yeah. Next award, the suspiciously similar award. And that award goes to honorary geek Michael Ferrara for his thoughts on Geyser Point versus Raglan Road.
Yeah. It reeked of Andrew texting him exactly what to say just moments before he made the call.
Listen, just because we're both speaking the truth, you know, doesn't mean there's collusion.
Is that what it means?
I don't know if it looks like collusion and it smells like collusion. Yeah.
Something.
I have a bad feeling about this.
So the next award is... we probably should play some sad music because this is the In Memoriam Award.
Okay.
And this is to the soon-to-be-departed Jelly Rolls, once a staple of the boardwalk and that whole area as a place to have a great time late into the night.
Yeah.
Probably the latest place open.
Yeah.
In Disney.
And soon to be, very soon to be closed. You know, we're 1 month out from the last day it's operating.
I wonder where they're going to go.
If it's not on Disney property, people probably aren't, like, Disney people aren't going to go to it.
Yeah. So they did say it's not going to be on Disney property.
Yeah, but who's...
Oh, so the business itself is going to relocate somewhere like in Orlando?
Yes.
Interesting.
It's not going to be City Walk
because they already have
Pat O'Brien's. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, listen, downtown Orlando is a fun place. You throw a dueling piano bar in there, I'm sure it'll do well.
What could possibly go wrong?
The next award is the Only the Good Die Young Award, and this is goes to the bar that we felt unfortunately faced a tough matchup way too early in its run, and that is La Cava del Tequila.
Yes. Yeah.
Sorry, Len.
Pouring one out for a fine bar that was a victim of what we won't say anymore is some very controversial seating.
I mean, here's the thing. We would have still picked Rose and Crown over it eventually anyway.
Yes.
Yeah, that's probably true.
And speaking of, the award for biggest party bar goes to the Rose and Crown.
Amen. Just because we had to give it some award.
Yeah.
Maybe they can hang that up in their window. Reedy Geeks, I think biggest party bar.
Us out if we try to hang something off it.
It'll only be the third time we've ever been asked to leave the Rose and Crown.
We should make stickers and put them in the wall,
in the windows.
In the windows ourselves.
Yeah, right next to their exactly. Just like we said, right next to their Zagat guy.
Yeah.
It's not a bad idea, actually.
The last two, of course, Bartender of the Year goes to Teslin from Geyser Point for helping with tiebreakers in the Sweet 16. And then the very last award is best podcaster involved in this bracket award.
Yes.
It's not one of us three.
No, there are four podcasters involved.
It is not one of the three of us. Spoiler alert. It goes to Lentest, of course. I'm still shocked that he filled that out. And I can't wait to tell him that none of his picks made it to the end.
that he actually scored last in our challenge.
possibly the lowest cumulative score of all of them.
Hopefully it's not the last time we hear from him.
No, thank you so much, Len, if you are listening, because probably not. But anyway, thank you so much.
Not this late in the episode.
No, he tuned out about 15 minutes into Andrew's history of Copper Creek.
I think he would be very interested in that. He seems like a historical context guy.
Big historical context guy.
Sam, are you about ready?
Yes, it's a glorious three-hour finale.
You got a minute and a half.
So now we have to do it.
Yeah, so we're ready. We're ready for the final.
We have to do it. Now, you don't just say it. Does anyone know completely where their vote is going?
I think I do.
I do as well. I know where I'm going.
Interesting. I think I do too.
I just don't.
Do you want to vote and then talk about how we came up with our votes landed?
Yeah,
instead of talking about the bars again?
Let's do that.
Okay. So I am voting for Nomad Lounge.
I'm voting for Nomad Lounge.
I'm voting for Nomad Lounge.
Wow.
There it is.
Wow.
And the listeners voted for Dockside.
Wow, the listeners couldn't give us a clean sweep.
No.
Listen.
But our votes are the ones that matter.
If the finale was a clean sweep, what was the bracket even for?
Right, exactly.
Oh,
that's a good point.
You know, this discussion is fun because there was some contention.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And that there were a lot of worthy options. Ultimately, I landed on Nomad Lounge because it's in the park.
Yeah,
this is Walt Disney World.
I was gonna say it would have Dockside Bar, Raglan Road, and even some of the great bars at the resorts. I would have respected the outcome of the bracket, but it feels good and kind of right that a bar in a park wins. And I went Nomad Lounge because, for me, I think Nomad Lounge elevates the experience of being in Animal Kingdom.
Yes.
Whereas Dockside Bar, I don't know how much it elevates the experience of Disney Springs, whereas it's just a really good place to spend an hour taking in a view, getting some food, getting a couple of drinks. But I think Nomad Lounge, for the theme it has and what it is, enhances your experience at the park.
And where it is. It's centrally located. You're right on the river there. It's a very special place that's worthy of a little bit of a wait to get a seat there sometimes. It's a great place to, kill a little time, enjoy the atmosphere of Animal Kingdom.
For me, it was actually your presentation, Sean. Learning about all of that in Tiffin's and in the Nomad Lounge too, about how the reason why it's called Nomad is, you know, we're all just travelers in this world coming,
we're all coming and going.
And we're all coming and going. And it is, I feel like, more Disney-esque. We talked about how like kind of magical Boathouse is, but that's what Disney is. It's Joe Rohde, right? Yeah. It's that type of feeling. And it's great, man. And sitting out there on the water, that river, hearing the Pandora sounds, mm-hmm. The music.
Watching a cavalcade travel by you.
Yeah.
It's still celebrating a one of one. A Nomad is a one of one.
Yeah.
I feel good about landing there as the best bar in Walt Disney World. Plus, it's a lot easier to say the best bar in Walt Disney World is in one of the parks.
Is in one of the four theme parks.
Yeah, as opposed to saying, like, take a bus to the outdoor mall and
down this pier.
Walk down this pier and to this bar that was themed by the Rainforest Cafe guy.
You're gonna pass someone with mozzarella sticks, another person with a chicken parm. Just keep on going. Yeah. Go right past their table.
Walk past the raw bar and down a ramp, and you'll hit a very nice bar.
Yeah, no, that's so true. This was a good outcome, and the process worked.
I think a lot of the bars that we ended up with in like the 8-4 and finals would have been the ones that
we
would have been there no matter what.
Yeah. I think we landed on the right winner regardless of the matchups that led up to it. I think the winner was still the winner.
Well, maybe we should go with the winner of our listeners' brackets, because we have tallied up the brackets.
Oh, yes. We have to announce the person
all
that
of these
entered,
people did all of these things.
And yes. One person rose above the rest
with 81 points. I'm not an NCAA guy. I don't know if that's a good amount of points or not a good amount of points.
That's not a good amount of points.
81?
Yeah.
No.
Okay. No, usually you got to be in the hundreds,
you're
right?
Like two high ones to 200s.
Okay. Yeah. So with 81 points, Tom from Long Island wins the bracket challenge.
Wow.
What is Tom's prize? What is his title?
Tom's prize, what is his title? Oh, his award, official award?
He's the drunkest geek.
Oh, yeah, he probably is if he picked the best bar. Yeah, he's the drunkest honorary geek among us.
I think he would respect that title.
Thanks, Tom from Long Island.
Yeah, Tom from Long Island. Make sure you write readygeeks@gmail.com. Give us your address, and we'll send you a prize.
Yeah.
So how are we going to let Nomad Lounge know that they won? Well, how are we going to present the Golden E-Ticket Award to them?
I think the next person to go to Disney World who's going to Animal Kingdom...
We need to actually physically create a Golden E-Ticket.
Stop in and talk to a bartender and let them know that they've won this prestigious award.
Yeah.
And then see what they want to do with it.
Do they make giant gold leg lamps? It's a very prestigious award.
He's like, it doesn't match the backstory of this bar, so we can't use this here.
Definitely not hanging that.
All right, well, Sean, do you want to take us out?
I guess so. This has been fun.
Yeah.
This was great. This is really great.
Thus concludes our mouse madness.
Madness managed, right?
We can go back to being, you know, normal.
Normal Reedy geeks.
Typical geeks.
Yeah.
All right, Sean, why don't you take us out?
Thanks for listening to another episode of the Reedy Geeks podcast. Rate, like, and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. Any future topic ideas, nicknames, questions, comments, concerns, email us at readygeeks@gmail.com and check out all our socials at Reedy Geeks. We'll see you next time.
What happened?
I won.
This week's Honest Send-Off comes courtesy of Walt from Albuquerque.
If you have an honest send-off that you want played at the end of one of our episodes, please submit an audio clip to us via our email address, readygeeks@gmail.com. Reedy Geeks, a Walt Disney World podcast, is hosted and executive produced by Andrew Schopey, Sean Murphy, and J.J. Hefner. Music and audio engineering by J.J. Hefner. Bon voyage!